Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen, and today we are going to be doing another episode in our Job Talk series, looking at a career opportunity in mainstream employment that may be a possibility for people living with disabilities. And today we are talking about simultaneous interpretation. To talk to us on that topic, we're joined today by Elizabeth Sammons. Elizabeth, how are you today?
I am fine and feel very honored to be with you, Lois.
Well, you and I speak on a semi-regular basis, and we always have fascinating conversations. And when you mentioned that this might be a topic for us to kind of explore on the podcast, my brain just kind of went, ooh, that sounds amazing. So thank you for raising that as a possible topic.
My pleasure.
So, Elizabeth, maybe we can just start. I know you have been a guest on the podcast before. You chatted to us about the representation of characters with disabilities in fiction. Mm-hmm. But maybe just so that people can be reminded, if they have heard that episode, of who you are, and just introduce yourself to people who didn't yet listen to that episode. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and a little of your background?
Yes, probably you can tell already by my accent that I'm American. I grew up in the state of Ohio, which is between New York and Chicago and the northeast side of the United States. My father was a librarian. My mother was a nurse, a nursing professor. And I later went on to get a college degree. I double majored in French and communication, and I got a master's degree in journalism. I was born blind and had a couple of surgeries that restored extremely basic vision in one eye. I use Braille, I use audio, and I use computer technology in my writing and in my reading. And I had a career primarily in nonprofit and then in the federal and state U.S. government. But since my kind of early retirement, I have been, as you mentioned, you know, doing creative writing, some consulting with museums, and occasionally also one of my favorite things to do, which is, in fact, interpreting.
You speak a number of languages. Now, you already mentioned that you studied French, but mm-hmm. What languages do you speak, and how do you come to have such a love of languages?
Why don't I introduce my love of languages and then how I learned the different languages I've studied. My mother, after World War II, lived in Japan as a child for 5 years because her father was a U.S. military officer, and that they occupied Japan. And my mother lived in the Japanese culture and really loved the Japanese language and culture. My father, although he grew up in a very small town, rural town, was always very interested in international things. And as a university librarian, welcomed students to our home, international students. And so even though I grew up in a really small town, my mother's stories of Japan and some Japanese guests, along with my father's open house to students from Africa, from Europe, from different places coming to our home for meals, really, actually, when I think back, amazingly opened the world for a blind girl in a small town. And I was so curious, and I loved to hear different accents. I think the way perhaps sighted people like to look at different kinds of pictures, for me, accents were so intriguing. And I began to imitate, not to make fun of, but because I wanted to practice speaking like that, and loved hearing foreign languages passionately. So I would sit and actually listen to a movie that I didn't understand just because it was so fascinating to me. I didn't have the chance to study a foreign language until I was in high school, but I was extremely fortunate to have a wonderful French teacher. So I studied that in high school, and between high school and college, I had the opportunity to be an exchange student. So I went to Switzerland, the French-speaking part of Switzerland, to study at a French academic high school for 1 year, living in a host family. And my host father, by happy coincidence, was a German teacher at that same academic high school. And he immediately saw that I was, he was just as passionate about languages as I was. And he said, "Do you want to learn German?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." So I had studied just a tiny bit of German before, but he said, "Well, we have no choice. Your class in high school is a French speaking class, but has already studied German for several years. But, you know, we're not going to be hard on you, but, you know, you can be in this class." And he spoke to his colleague professor and explained, "You know, she's an American. She wants to learn, but please don't understand that she hasn't had the opportunity that the other students had." But I did study along with them. And at the end of the year, my host father said to me, "Do you know that you speak German better than our French students who have studied it for so long?" But I think it was my love of it, and that they didn't really love it. Then when I was in my master's degree, so I did the major in French, as I mentioned, and I was one class short of a minor in German. So I did continue those two. But at the larger university where I studied journalism, I got to study the language I had always wanted to study, which was Russian. They had a good, again, very good Russian department. I've always been lucky having super good teachers. But almost as soon as I began to study Russian, I was asked, I was volunteering at a church where they helped immigrants and refugees studying English. And I was told, "There's a Russian woman here who really doesn't speak much English. Could you help her since you're studying Russian?" And I very quickly became introduced to her lovely family, and it became an exchange. And then when I was a little more confident, I began to volunteer with some additional elderly Russian immigrants and refugees, many of whom were coming to the United States at that time, being allowed to come. And these were, and I say this with respect, it's much harder to learn a foreign language when you're older. Say you're 80 years old and you come with your children and grandchildren, you're very glad if you can even say, "Hello, how are you? How much does this cost?" And I worked with these lovely, amazing elderly people who wanted to really know about America, and from a real American, but who were so willing to give back to me their language and their culture. And ultimately, to make a long story short, passed an exam and was able to get a job working in Russia as a bilingual guide for a traveling exhibit, which is another story. And my final language, Hungarian, I learned because we have an organization in the United States called Peace Corps, which is a federally funded organization organization that sends volunteers to other countries. I believe we have Peace Corps in South Africa, in fact. But in my situation, I was an English teacher. I became an English teacher in Hungary. So as soon as I found out I would have that assignment, I found a Hungarian in the community and got a textbook and began to study Hungarian. And then living there, of course, I improved my Hungarian. So that's kind of the story of my four, two very fluent languages, the French and Russian, and two reasonably solid languages, German and Hungarian, that I've had the privilege to learn in my life.
I find it quite interesting, just the details that you shared of the experience of learning different languages, because I think so often what challenges people in learning a different language is that they're not able to really converse with people and immerse themselves in the language. And it sounds like that has become an important part of the way that you started developing and then developing your knowledge of the languages.
Yes. And let me just say, unless you are a child learning, and children are language vacuum cleaners. I'm so jealous of children, and you in South Africa are so fortunate linguistically that you have many languages around you that you hear and you can learn as young people. Where I lived, at least in Ohio and many places in the USA, don't have that opportunity. If you are not a young child learning a language, I think it's very important to have two things. Absolutely that opportunity that you said, or you find the opportunity to converse, but academic study is also important. So they're two sides of the same coin. And it takes a lot of work the older you get to learn a language. So the younger you are, the better it is.
Yeah. I've also heard a lot of people talking about the link between an ability with languages, the affinity with learning languages, and how often that is linked with either music or mathematics. Mm-hmm. But I wonder also to what degree we as people who are living with a visual impairment, because we rely so much on our listening, our sense of hearing, do you think that played much of a role?
Yes. And I will say I am a non-professional musician. I've always loved music. And I do much better in music than I do in math, but I also love math. And there really is a definite relationship there. But yes, because we don't see the expressions on people's faces or pick up some of the nonverbal, it is something that we pay attention to. The linguistic, the tone of voice, the way the words come together. I completely agree with you about that.
Great. I want to focus a little more on the way that you have used your language skills, your simultaneous mm-hmm. interpretation mm-hmm. skills, and how that played out in your life and in your working, your working life.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, what is simultaneous interpretation, and tell us some of your experiences there.
Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to hear you use the word interpreting, because for our listeners, translation is the bilingual ability in written languages. Interpreting is the bilingual or more ability in spoken language ability. So that's why we're using the word interpreting here. And I've done a tiny bit of translation as well, but I really prefer interpreting. So very informally, I used some French interpreting with students from Haiti and other countries who came to the USA who had a knowledge of written English, but really had not learned much spoken English. I mentioned that I passed an exam to be able to work in Russia. I was a guide on a cultural exchange exhibit, but there were non-Russian speaking specialists who came to that exhibit who were asked to present or to have conversations with architects and other professionals. And we, as the guides, were requested during the exhibit hours to interpret for them. And many of us, or some of us, after hours also said, if you're invited for a meal or for further conversation, we're glad to help you. And so I began doing interpreting with that. But I've done the most interpreting with Russian and English, so I'll stick to that for this conversation. Following that and returning to the USA, I got a job with our pension system, which is called Social Security. And I had told them on my resume and in my interview that I had the linguistic abilities. And occasionally they asked me to interpret for people coming to receive a pension who didn't speak English. And I was glad to do that. I was always glad to do that. In my church, it's an international church. We've also had visitors who are Russian speaking who have come. And I have interpreted both informally and also, as they have delivered sermons or other speaking, to people within the church congregations. But my favorite kind of simultaneous interpreting is what I call social interpreting. One of the speakers in particular, I said, pretend I'm not here. And he was a very friendly gentleman, and he was in a crowd where no one spoke Russian. I said, if there's anyone you want to speak with, just start speaking. I'm just at your shoulder. I'll take your arm and I'll just voice for you what you say. And he loved doing that, just going out into the crowd and being with people and forgetting that I was there, just speaking and letting me convey the words and that other person speaking, and they would have direct eye contact, shaking hands. And I was a step behind, but where they could both see me or hear me and just being the bridge. So that was really one of my favorite interpreting types.
I think we sometimes take communication for granted. And being in a situation where you as an interpreter are the bridge between one person sharing their thoughts, their ideas, and another person being able to receive and understand those ideas, it's a really special place to be, and one that is fundamentally important in the international world in that we're living in.
Yes, and I will add that as a blind person, my usual life is going into a room and not being aware, oh, who's there, what's happening, the way a visual person can scope the room quickly and know. When I am an interpreter, I feel a real sense of positive power. I'm the one who knows what's going on, and I am able to convey that information to someone who is linguistically blind and share that information with them and let two people or more truly, as you said, share their thoughts and communicate. It's a wonderful feeling.
Let's kind of look at a little more of the intricacies of conveying thoughts and ideas from one person of a culture, a context, a language, and transferring those to someone of a different culture, a different context, and a different language. What are some of the challenges there that need to be taken into consideration as an interpreter?
Well, anyone who wants to be an interpreter needs to have, just as a base, a large vocabulary that is inclusive of many different topics. It doesn't mean that you're a complete living dictionary, but every chance you get to learn new words is a really good chance. And let me just say quickly, one way you can test yourself is to turn on the radio or the television or a YouTube of news, and in your own mind, interpret the news topics, which will be very different topics, and find out what words you don't know, and then learn those words. Just write down or remember the words that you need to learn in the other language. But I'm digressing a little, but that's just a little hint to help you expand, find out, check and expand your linguistic base. But you're right, beyond that, and particularly, again, South Africa being such a diverse country, every linguistic group has its own linguistic culture and its own sense of humor, its own references, meaning certain words having much more than just their surface meaning. If I say in English, oh, she's a peach, I mean in English, oh, she's so sweet and so lovely. But that might be in another language and culture, a completely different meaning. And if I were to literally say in the other languages that I know, she's a peach, it wouldn't mean anything. They're like, what, is she a fruit? So, you know, I would need to say, lovely lady, or how sweet she is. And so there are things like that, but there are also more technical situations. And you mentioned about math and music. The British world, to some degree, and certainly the American world, uses the English system of measurement and of temperature. So we use the Fahrenheit system in the English, pounds and feet. Most of the rest of the world, and I believe South Africa, yes, uses the metric system.
Correct.
And Celsius.
Yeah.
So if I'm saying, if I'm an English person, an American saying, oh man, it's 85 degrees out, and it's 2 miles to that gas station. We're out of gas. I think we're in trouble. You know, I would have to think, how do I say that? And I might say, hopefully I know, I need to know the Celsius system enough to say, if I don't know it at all, I could say it's very hot out. Mm-hmm. But I could also, you know, hopefully say, oh, it's more than 30 degrees. And maybe I don't know miles, but I know the distance. And I might say, it will take us about half an hour to walk to the station. So even if I can't know the exact number or the exact temperature, in a non-scientific conversation, if it's a scientific one, I'd better know. But I'm talking about, you know, more spoken conversational or lecture. I need to have a way to still carry across the meaning that speaker has said.
So the basic task, at least in a social context, I guess, mm-hmm. is more about the conveying of the meaning than the exact, and I'm going to use the word translation of mm-hmm. direct mm-hmm. word.
Well, I would say this, Lois, whenever possible, use the exact interpretation, whenever possible. But don't get upset that if you're talking about 34 degrees Celsius, don't think, oh, I have to multiply this by 2 and add 32. Think about the meaning of it's very hot. And unless they're saying the melting point of this ingredient is 34, that's important. But if, as for the social or political interpreting, you don't quite have to be so concerned about it. But no, I do not want interpreting is a very precise topic. In fact, I had the opportunity in Russia to teach interpreting, and I class interpreting the art and the science.
So looking then at simultaneous interpretation, what are the types of situations in which it can be used? You've already mentioned several in sharing the stories you have, but mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get a sense of in what contexts.
Oh my goodness.
Could it be used as a career option, I guess?
Yes. Well, the most famous interpreters are the ones that you see with the headphones at the United Nations or at the multicultural conferences. Many times, although not always, those interpreters are certified interpreters and expected to pass some very rigorous vocabulary and other exams. And that's a wonderful thing if you can do that. But there are so many other situations as well where interpreters are needed. So it can be in a courtroom. It can be at a medical office. It can be at a, you know, international, you know, conversation of people who, for example, I mentioned the church interpreting that I did. There might be a missionary who is coming or others who are visiting. It can be in a store where someone is having trouble communicating with another person and you just step in and say, oh, may I help you? So there are many, many, both formal and informal, opportunities for interpreting, including simultaneous interpreting.
And I think if one kind of extracts from that, any situation in which communication takes place, mm-hmm. there is a potential space for someone with a knowledge of simultaneous interpretation.
Yes. And I should also add, there is in the United States, quite a field for telephone interpreting. And again, this is usually of a more formal nature, say a doctor and patient or an interview. There are companies that hire telephone interpreters as well. So I should have mentioned that. But yes, there are many, many contexts.
Are you finding that that is extending now to online meetings?
Yes. There are some online meetings where interpreting is used. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Right. Because I mean,
I myself have not done that, but, mm-hmm. But yes, I know that it is being done.
I have noticed, a few meetings, international meetings, where there is the use of artificial intelligence, AI, mm-hmm. to have that interpretation, mm-hmm. Purpose. But as we all know, AI is still a developing science. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's really interesting.
And AI is amazing. I mean, I, as an interpreter, well, as a translator, I would not be against AI. What I would say as a translator is go ahead and get that basic AI, written text, but then go through it phrase by phrase, line by line, and make sure that it's conveying what you want. As an interpreter, I think AI is a little, at least at this time in technology, is a little more dangerous. First, because of the rapidity. And secondly, because of that, again, if I'm saying she's a peach, it might say that and make no sense. Or sometimes context, like the tone of voice. You know, if I were to say to you, oh, did he really do that? Or did he really do that? Those are two completely different subtexts. And I do not think that the current AI is reliably capable of making those nuances, which a human being and bicultural person could hopefully do.
Yes. It's a developing science. as I said, but at least there is the option, and it is a developing science.
Yeah.
So, Elizabeth, what skills would you say one would need in order to become an interpreter? And what training is available for someone who might be interested in following this as a formal training?
Well, again, the breadth of your vocabulary is very important. The more you can know in another language, the words and also the culture of those words, reading that culture's literature, if they have a literature, taking every opportunity to, if it's your second language, to spend time with natives of that culture to share more with you. The awareness of the more technical aspects, as I said, such as measurements, such as your cultural illusions. Humor is a very difficult thing. But trying to become aware of those things. In terms of training, I know that there are interpreting classes that are available in various contexts. My suggestion is know the language very, very well before you even begin to take interpreting classes, because if you don't, you'll be lost. Unfortunately, I don't really know what is available online at this point in terms of interpreting training. But the more, it's something that the more you do it, and even practicing at home, even listening to, say, a program and speaking to yourself what you would say and writing down questions to yourself. How would I do that? I don't know. I need to learn this. Are great assistance in preparing to be a skillful interpreter. There are online tests that are available that one can test oneself in terms of level as well. So it's sometimes hard for us to judge how fluent we really are. It's funny, just as an example of that, recently I had a visitor who is from Brazil, and she spoke, you know, what I would call solid basic English, meaning, you know, you couldn't speak about medieval philosophy, but you could certainly talk about many things if you spoke slowly and, you know, gave her time to answer those things. And Hungarian is my weakest language, and I decided I was going to listen to her speaking in English, and in my own mind, go back into Hungarian and interpret into Hungarian what she said to see whose is better. Is her English better? Or is my Hungarian better? Just out of curiosity to see, because I knew I could really say her English was basically good. And to my delight, I was actually finding myself very easily being able to say in my mind in Hungarian what she was saying in English. And I said, oh, maybe your Hungarian really is not as weak as you think it is. So doing those kinds of mental exercises to help yourself to learn again and to test yourself a little bit are very useful activities.
So it's the old adage that practice really does make perfect.
Well, I would say practice makes permanent. Beware of mistakes that you make, because if you continue to repeat those mistakes, those become instinctual for you. Yes. And so it takes some humility if you're speaking to a native speaker of your second language to say, could you please correct me? Or is this right the way I said it? Or sometimes, what is the difference between this word and this word? Or if I say this, is this what it means? So there's a lot of questioning involved, and be careful not to make your mistakes permanent.
That's a very good piece of advice. Thank you, Elizabeth. So considering the context of what we've been talking about, why do you think that simultaneous interpretation might be a good skill, experience, activity, or job for a person with a disability?
Well, there are several reasons. First of all, as you mentioned, with the online opportunities, and I also, you know, mentioned the telephone opportunity, it gives some opportunities for people to work from home or to work from a place where they don't necessarily need to travel. But if they are able to travel and to, you know, go reliably to the place where they're needed, your lack of, say, vision or lack of mobility, if you are able to travel and be somewhere, or lack of some other abilities, often do not play at all into your being able to be a really good interpreter. And it's very encouraging to me when I'm working with linguistics and languages that I'm focusing and those I'm serving are completely focusing on the things I can do in the abilities I do have, and the fear or the prejudice or the discomfort with someone who has a disability really goes away when you're in the context of providing a service in a professional and kind way that people need. So I think those are some reasons that it's a very, very good job for someone who has good linguistic ability, but maybe a disability that prevents certain things.
Elizabeth, if people would like to reach out to you to learn a little bit more about simultaneous interpretation, how can they reach you?
The best way would be to post my email with the interview. That I do respond to email inquiries. And I would encourage our listeners, if you do email me, maybe if you could put a subject line like listener to this podcast or question about simultaneous interpreting, I will try to prioritize that and to provide what information I can.
Thank you. I will include your email address in the show notes of the episode then.
Okay.
As a final question, Elizabeth, what advice would you offer to a person with a disability who might be interested in pursuing a career in simultaneous interpretation? Where should they start?
Well, they should start by reading, writing, and speaking as many languages as possible and as well as possible. Again, you being in South Africa are such a wealthy linguistic country. And there are so many opportunities. And I would especially say to young people, this is the time to do that. The younger you are, the easier it is for you to learn. And this can involve, as it did in my life, volunteer work with people from a different language community. And again, when you're doing that volunteer work, people see your ability, not your disability. And people, it can change their view about our disability community, seeing someone who is helping them despite any type of a disability. And that's the beauty of language is, you know, you need to be able to hear and you need to be able to know and speak with the language. You don't have to be able to walk or see or many other things that many other jobs demand. So I would say do absolutely as much preparation as you can with people of as many languages as possible, because it's wonderful to know two languages, but if you know three or four or five, you are even more marketable in when you have your resume and when you have your, you're looking for a job, because it makes you more unusual. It distinguishes you. So learn well, do the kind of practice exercises that I mentioned. One thing I will also say, and I say this carefully, but work on your accent in a language. Just because you know a language, even to interpret, make sure that your accent is easy to understand by the native speakers of that language. And there might be sounds that are difficult for you to make. You know, for example, just in English, I'll say one example. Many people who are speaking English as a second language have trouble with the TH sound, the sound, or the R sound. But if I say 1, 2, 3, but it comes out 1, 2, 3, well, 3, although of course most English people would understand that, but a tree is something that I climb. So work on the details of your pronunciation, because as an interpreter, it is your voice and your articulation and pronunciation that the other person has. And so copy what it is that the native speaker is doing as much as you can. Of course, you will probably always have some accent, but don't accept the fact of just saying, well, I'm a native speaker of, I'm just going to say an example. I'm a native speaker of Zulu. So we don't have the th sound in our language. So I don't really need to do that. But in English, the th sound or the r are very important. So learn those. You can learn them. You have to practice it. Just like I had to practice making many sounds in other languages that were not my native sound. But that practice will make permanent. And you will learn that. And people, if you have a particularly good accent in a foreign language, you are more likely to get the interpreting job than someone who has a very strong accent, because it's simply easier for the native speaker to understand you. And you said earlier, Lois, you know, those of us who are visually impaired, we tend to listen very carefully. There's no reason that you cannot learn a sound. Yes, it takes practice. Yes, it takes some patience, but keep going with it and learn it. And then you can say, not only am I an interpreter, but I'm an interpreter who has a very clear, easy accent for people to understand. So that would be another piece of advice.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Really appreciate what you've shared with us today.
You're welcome. And my love to the Zulus out there. I only use that because it came into my mind. So I, when I said that, only respect intended.
I hear you are making the point rather than the specifics. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Today on A Different Way of Seeing, we've been chatting to Elizabeth Sammons on the topic of simultaneous interpretation. We want to thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your insights, and your experiences with us, Elizabeth. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Lois, it's truly my pleasure. Thank you for speaking with me too.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.